read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Read, read books, books. Hold them in your hand, and you'll hippity hoppity clippity cloppity off to a different land.
One of the highlights of the week is sitting down with our independent booksellers to discuss some great reads they want to share with Roundtable listeners. We have a great list today. Lily Bartels is book buyer for the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery and is here to convince us, like she did me, that all of these titles are winners. And it's a wonderful pleasure to have Lily back on the air with us. Good morning, Lily. How are you?
I'm great, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you. Good. Where would you like to begin?
I want to start today with a new novel by an author that I follow pretty closely. Her name is Mary Doria Russell. She's a pretty versatile writer that writes in several different genres, but really her specialty is historical fiction, in which she takes characters and events that are real to life, and through her very meticulous research, she creates these fully fleshed characters that give us a glimpse into events of the past that make them come alive on the page. And for this new book, it's called Women of the Copper Country. She takes on an era of American history that I feel I've been woefully ignorant about, and that is the miners' strike in 1913 in Calumet, Michigan, of the copper miners. So in July of 1913, the main character, Annie Clements, and she is a real character. You can go online and see pictures of her and read about her. She's 25 years old. She's lived in Calumet all her life. She's a young wife and mother. And, of course, everyone in the town that she lives in works for the copper mines.
Right.
Under very dangerous conditions, often life-threatening conditions, for very meager wages. And still, they and their families are living life of great impoverishment and deprivation. And she certainly can see actually lives the injustice of that. And it's a town, of course, in which it's a company town, which the company owns everything, including the houses that they live in. So somehow this very young woman is inspired to organize and lead 15,000 workers in that great copper producing area in a strike. And somehow she has the inner strength and the heart and, I have to say, amazing courage in the face of often brutal force that's arrayed against these struggling workers, to actually commit to this and actually do it. And interestingly, her goodness, her commitment, her determination, and her inability to be intimidated is juxtaposed with the predictably really heartless and ruthless copper miner boss, whose name is James McNaughton, of course, also a true historical character. So I found this a fascinating and moving story, of course, about how one woman helped to inspire and lead this movement. But the larger story to me was really a reminder of how so often at different eras of our history, and it's easy to forget the major role that women played in so many areas in affecting change. And I have to say, as I was reading the book, I was startled to come across a local connection, which is that back in 1913, there were 36 unions at GE in Schenectady. And with the support of the then socialist mayor of Schenectady, George Lunn, they succeeded in their strike and then proceeded, all 36 unions, to each send $1,000 to Calumet to help sustain and support these strikers during their very, very difficult strike. So this is a book that is obviously perfect for, you know, women and men who love historical fiction. But really, it's a story that anyone who loves an engrossing and dramatic story can enjoy. And I also have to put in a little plug. There is a subtext of a romance that develops between Annie and one of the newspaper photographers who comes to cover this story. So once again, Mary Doria Russell really brings a segment of our history to life in ways that are really fascinating.
The name of the book is The Women of the Copper Country by Mary Doria Russell.
Next, a great short novel, but one that packs a punch and I can't recommend highly enough. It's called The Saturday Night Ghost Club by Craig Davidson. One of my coworkers read it and said, oh, you have to read this. And I did. And indeed, I'm telling you, you have to read it. Right now, there's a real resurgence of nostalgia about 1980s childhoods, I think perfectly reflected by the huge success of the show Stranger Things,
yeah,
which, of course, I'm addicted to. But at any rate, and there's also movies like Stand By Me that, you know, take a nostalgic look at childhood friendships. This one takes place in the 1980s in Niagara Falls. A young boy who's just turned 12 is growing up there in this, you know, it's kind of a seedy area now, but it still has elements of magic and mystery. And Jake spends a lot of time with his eccentric Uncle Calvin, who's a lovely, benevolent man, but also has a penchant for the occult and an interest in conspiracy theories. And so when two new siblings, Bully and Dove are their names, come to town, Jake befriends them. And then Calvin initiates them all into this, what he calls the Saturday Night Ghost Club. And if you had to encapsulate this whole story, you know, briefly, it would be misfit kids spend unforgettable summer investigating local ghost stories and urban legend. And it actually starts out as kind of a lighthearted lark. But as the kids get deeper into things, they begin to uncover some darker mysteries that are more complicated and, excuse me, a lot darker than they could have imagined. So it's a short book. Like I said, it's a little over 200 pages, but it really packs a punch and it really stays with you. It has elements of the creepy and the spooky and a little bit of the supernatural, but it's also very warm and poignant in its portrayal of childhood friendships. So I would say it's an irresistible coming-of-age story that's completely fabulous and one that you shouldn't miss.
It is The Saturday Night Ghost Club by Craig Davidson. All right.
Shifting gears a little, we have nonfiction in the form of The Ghosts of Eden Park by Karen Abbott. This is a true story, one that I had not, you know, heard of, that takes place at the start of Prohibition when a German immigrant to this country who has a law practice decides to give up his practice and become a bootlegger. Well, does he ever? Within 2 years, this man, George Remus, has become a multimillionaire, and he owns 35% of the illicit liquor trade in the United States. And he's living a life of sort of Jay Gatsby-like opulence in Cincinnati with his wife, Imogene. Along comes this young woman named Mabel Walker Willebrand, who's just out of college, and she is hired by the U.S. Attorney General's office as a prosecutor. Part of the reason that she's offered that position is that they perceive her bosses, her male bosses, perceive her as someone who is not going to impose a threat on, let's say, what is their very comfortable relationship with George Remus, sidebar, graft and corruption. But as it turns out, to their disadvantage, she becomes determined to take down George Remus, not because she's so committed to the idea of prohibition, but because he's a lawbreaker and she feels he needs to be brought to justice. So she deploys her best investigator, a man named Franklin Dodge, to do just that, to put him behind bars. And Dodge is successful in doing that. But subsequent to his going to jail, Remus's wife, Imogene, starts an affair with Franklin Dodge, and together they plot to take down Remus. And let's just say murder ensues. Now, Abbott has used the actual court transcripts from this murder trial, all of the contemporaneous documentation, the newspaper articles, to create this really edge-of-your-seat murder trial from what could be essentially kind of dusty old facts sitting in some courtroom archive somewhere. And then there are twists and turns that if this were fiction, it would be hard for you to suspend your disbelief, even for the benefit of fiction. But these things actually happen. And Abbott goes to great lengths to let us know in a note before the book begins that there's not one line of dialogue within quotation marks in this story that was not uttered by one of the players in this scenario. It somehow she takes this. It was one of the more famous murder trials of the jazz era of the 1920s, and she makes it compulsively readable. And as I said, it's like an edge of your seat story.
It is The Ghosts of Eden Park. Karen Abbott is the author. All right.
Richard Russo is back, the beloved Richard Russo, with his first standalone novel in, I think, 10 years, called Chances Are. And if you love Richard Russo, or if you don't know Richard Russo and you want a good introduction to him, this would be it. Because a lot of what people look for in Richard Russo's stories is all present here. He explores the theme of friendship, how it can be enduring and powerful, but also complicated. And then you've got the male friendships, the father and son relationships, the lifelong crushes that may or may not go anywhere, the class differences within small towns. But he introduces a new element for Russo in this story, and that is a mystery. This story is different because it brings up a cold case from 1971. So these three men who were college friends, very close friends in the Vietnam era college years, are at a reunion on Martha's Vineyard. And while the reunion is great, it also brings up a lot of old memories, a lot of old mysteries, in fact. It turns out that these three young men went to college with this woman named Jacy, whom they all, of course, had mad crushes on, were madly in love with. And when one of them draws a low lottery number and has to go to the war, there's a farewell party for him at the home of the mother of one of these young men on Martha's Vineyard. And Jacy is there, but after that party, she's never seen or heard from again. And her disappearance becomes a cold case. So this entire reunion is spent talking about, lingering over, pouring through this this disappearance of Jacy. And there's suspense here, which again is different from most Russo stories, but he incorporates it very well. But it also includes, you know, the ironic humor that we depend on, but also his insight into human beings and his compassion for human beings. Mm-hmm. And there's a real humanity to all of it.
It is Chances Are by Richard Russo. It's a wonderful novel. It's terrific. He's actually going to be at Skidmore College tomorrow night, and I'm going to be talking to him.
Yay.
On stage.
Lucky you.
And at the Zenkel. And it'll be quite an evening. So he's a very good friend, and I love him very much, and his book is incredible. So it's Rick Russo, Chances Are, and you're right, it's a great introduction, too. If you've never read him, and if you haven't, I don't know.
He's a huge author for our customers.
Yeah, and a
wonderful
boy.
Him.
Yeah, of course. All right, what else?
I have Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead by Olga Tokarczuk, a Polish writer. Of course, it's been translated into English. This book was a finalist for last year's Man Booker International Prize. She's a brilliant writer, an intellectual writer, and she constructs stories that are they're immensely entertaining, but also very thought-provoking. So this one I would describe as a literary crime story / murder mystery that takes place in a secluded Polish town near the Czech border, where this woman, Janine, who's a retired school teacher and considered a bit of an eccentric recluse, who spends a lot of her time translating Blake, whom she's obsessed with, and also taking care of the homes of summer residents in this area. She prefers animals to humans. She's funny and she's brilliant, but as I said, considered something of an eccentric by her neighbors in the town. So into this quiet, tranquil location, suddenly murder is introduced as local hunters begin to be murdered. And shockingly, the only things left at these murder scenes are the tracks of animals. So are animals committing murder? It's a thriller. It's a comedy with a political subtext. As a writer, Olga Tokarczuk tends to be a political and feminist writer. But in this story, she also becomes a kind of Eastern European Miss Marple as she sets out to discover what's behind the deaths of these hunters. And she poses some interesting questions, like, is the murder of an animal less serious than the murder of a human being? It's a rich atmospheric story. It has a final twist that will blow your mind. It's well worth becoming acquainted with Olga Tokarczuk through this book.
I'm afraid we have to end it there. We're out of time.
Bummer.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But if you want to see the full list, you can go online, wamc.org/roundtable, and you can catch it there. The book was Inland, and it's great. For more information on the Open Door Bookstore and Gift Gallery in Schenectady and the great work they do, you can go to opendoor-bookstore.com. Lily Bartel, it's always great to see you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.